Jason is going to be telling everybody about what's going to happen in New South Wales over the next few years or so.
Thanks, Leslie. Okay, so as Leslie mentioned, I'm in the Climate Change Research Centre at the University of New South Wales. So I'm surrounded by people who are very interested in how the climate works, looking at how it's changed in the past, how it's changing now, how it might change in the future, this kind of thing. So I'm always on the verge of launching into some jargon that people might not know. If I do that, feel free to interrupt and ask me about questions and so on. So what I'm going to cover today is about climate projections for New South Wales. Of course, so the climate projections start with global climate models. Okay, and you can produce projections for a region based directly on those global climate models. And many people have done this. People have probably come across CSIRO's Climate Change in Australia work. There was also work done with a group at the University of New South Wales and the DEQA, when DEQA existed, producing projections for New South Wales. But these global climate models are running on pretty coarse spatial resolutions. Okay? So we're talking 250 kilometre between grid points in these models. So for many situations, you may well need higher spatial resolution. But there's other situations where maybe you don't. Maybe the GCMs actually give you enough information. So I'll quickly look at those questions, when you actually need higher spatial resolution. And then I'll talk about some higher spatial resolution downscaled climate projections that have already been produced and are around and potentially available for other people to use in adaptation research. And I'll end with talking a bit about the NARCLIM project, which is just starting, but will produce a significant regional downscale data set in the future. So, GCM projected changes. Here I've got three example outputs of the mean annual temperature for the present day from three different GCMs from what was called the CMIP3 experiment. So this was the big GCM experiment that was performed and largely informed the last IPCC report. Okay. And what you can see here is, on the top right, this was the lowest GCM that contributed to this experiment, and on the bottom left here, this is the highest resolution GCM through this experiment, and in the middle is a sort of medium resolution GCM. So you can clearly see with the lowest resolution, you can see the blocks, very blocky, even when we're looking at the whole globe, right? And that gets better. But broadly speaking, you know, they show the same climate, right? In temperature, it's fairly easy. We're warm around the equator and we're cool at the poles and so on. We can look at the change that each of these GCMs produces. And again, so this is between for present day and the end of the 21st century. Broadly speaking, of course, they're similar. You see the largest changes happening around the Arctic region in the north. And the smallest changes happening around the Southern Ocean. But, of course, they're not the same. As you move to the higher resolution, you actually see a bigger signal in Antarctica than you see in the lower resolution one. But broadly speaking, we see pretty similar results no matter the resolution when we're looking at temperature. Precipitation, this is a much more difficult field to get. But again, broadly speaking, when we look at modern representation of climate, they tell us pretty similar things. So we get a band of very high precipitation around the tropics. We have bands of low precipitation covering across the Sahara region and the Middle East there. And then in sort of spots in the South Pacific and the South Atlantic and the eastern side there. And they all sort of broadly agree where those regions are. When you look at the change field in precipitation, though, now we start to see much more disagreement between the models on sort of the global scale. They agree in some ways. The biggest changes we're seeing are in the tropics, which is probably not surprising. That's where most of the rain is falling. So in absolute terms, it's the biggest change, even though in percentage terms it might not be, because there's a lot of rain there to start with. But if you look in any particular region, trying to look at some of the details here, we start to see much more sort of disagreement between the models in precipitation. So that's the information that these GCN-based regional estimates are based on. Okay, so you've got to keep that in mind. It's quite coarse scale. There can be quite a bit of variability there. But CSIRO produced this Climate Change in Australia website pretty quickly after the last IPCC report. And a lot of work went into it, and there's a lot of information that's available here. If you haven't looked at it, there's the URL there. And you can go in here and you can look at New South Wales, and you can look at a whole bunch of different climate variables. You can look at different timescales of change in the future. Here what I'm showing is the change in temperature between present day and 2070. And you can see sort of low, medium and high emission scenarios. And in the middle, they have what they refer to as the 50th percentile. So this is essentially the mean of all the GCMs, the change that they're estimating. And you can see, for instance, in the high emission scenario, we're looking at about a 3 to 4 degree increase in temperature. They also show the 10th percentile and the 90th percentile. So this is kind of gives us the range. Okay, so the 10th percentile is sort of the smallest change that might happen. The 90th percentile is like the highest change that might happen. And you can see there we're sort of plus or minus a degree or so either way. You can also look at precipitation. So that's what I'm doing here. And now you can see really how much variation there is in precipitation. So for New South Wales, if you look at the 50th percentile there, basically there's no change, okay, based on these models. There's this area here where you're looking at a small increase. But if you look at the 10th and 90th percentiles, this is anywhere between a decrease of 20% and an increase of 20%. Okay, so there's not a lot of sort of useful information, I guess, that you can get directly from this. Now, from this website, you can only get these pre-pictures. Okay, the data, however, is available if you contact them directly. There's a contact link there. You can send them an email and talk to them about actually getting data sets if you want to get data sets directly from this group of GCMs. So the next one I'll talk a bit about was this work done led by Professor Andy Pittman, who's actually at my centre at UNSW. He and his group combined four GCMs, produced an ensemble projection for climate change. Now, they chose four because they did a whole lot of evaluation on how well the GCMs did in this region, and they picked the ones they thought did really well and based their estimates on that. Andy and his group are basically of the opinion that given the spatial scale of these GCMs, how they work, that sort of the area, size of area for which they have confidence in this is about a quarter of the state. Okay, so he liked to talk about sort of northwest New South Wales, northeast New South Wales, south, like this, and didn't break it down into smaller regions, just given the spatial resolution of the data that the whole work was based on. But you can have a look at some of the work that they did, and here we've broken down the rainfall change into seasons. This is between 2050 and present day. And basically what they found is for the whole state, the yellow to orange, these are drying areas that are becoming drier, and the sort of pink to purple are areas that are becoming wetter. And so what you see is that they found that basically in summer, everywhere in the state gets at least a bit wetter. Okay. And in winter, everywhere in the state gets at least a bit drier. But in the transition seasons, you see a clear distinction in the state between the sort of north and northeast becoming wetter and the southern part of the state becoming drier in both transition seasons. Okay. So that means, as an overall, in the end, on an annual basis, you've sort of got the southern part of the state becoming drier, the northern part becoming wetter. But it's changing the distribution seasonally of when that rain is happening as well. And you can look at temperature, again, so when you're looking at the future, everywhere is getting warmer, but that warming is not equally distributed through the year either. And so what you're finding is actually we most of the warming, more of the warming is happening in winter. So our winters are becoming milder faster than our summers are becoming hotter, if you like. Okay. So that's the sort of information you get when you're looking just at the GCM, collection of GCMs. So the question then is, like, do you need higher spatial resolution? And there's kind of two factors in this, one that's really pretty easy to judge and one that's much harder to judge. The first one, the easy one, is are there surface variations that are important? Okay. So these are things like coastlines, so the transition from land to ocean has a big influence on local climate. Mountains, the presence of mountains has a big influence on local climate. And abrupt land use changes. So if you go abruptly from a large forest to a big grassland area, that generates local climate effects as well. So those things are fairly easy to judge by looking at your area. And then the next factor is somewhat more difficult to judge, but can be equally as important, and these are whether regional scale atmospheric phenomena are important. Okay. So frontal rain systems, these are really difficult things for GCMs to get right, but if your rain is dominated by frontally caused rain, you probably need higher spatial resolution to get that right. Mountain barrier jets, if you have long mountain range, quite frequently you'll get what's called a mountain barrier jet, so you'll get an area of much higher wind form on one side of the mountain, and this can actually be a key transport pathway for atmospheric moisture and actually shift the zone that will get rain like if you didn't capture that barrier jet, you'd put the rain in the wrong place. Of course, sea breezes can have a strong effect on local climate, and then there's lots of other effects. So when you're in the tropics, you really need to be able to properly capture tropical cyclones, which the GCM scales have difficulty capturing in this kind of stuff. Okay, so if you decide you do need higher spatial resolution, where can you go? Where can you find data that gives you that kind of higher spatial resolution? First I'll just sort of show what spatial resolution means when we focus in on regions. So these are the same three models I showed the global pictures of before, but focused in on Australia. And you see for mean annual temperature, you get pretty similar story for all these resolutions of these three GCMs. And mean annual precipitation, it's a bit more variation there, but it's not, they're not totally out of the ballpark. They're all sort of saying similar type things. Again, we can look at the change. And again, in terms of temperature over Australia, there's differences between them, but they say similar things. You know, the biggest increases are generally the sort of inland and inland west. Precipitation, now we start to see that there's this change in precipitation is kind of much more uncertain based on these models. But if we zoom in on southeast Australia, so here's New South Wales, and what you can see there is the outline of all the local government areas across southeast Australia. And it's the same three models. Again, here, looking at the mean temperature, sort of, as you can see, sort of a similar story between the models. You can look at precipitation. It's not quite the same story between the models. And again, we can look at the change in terms of temperature through these three, and then in terms of precipitation. Okay. So this is kind of level of information that you get when you focus down to sort of a quarter of Australia. What if we're actually interested in the greater Sydney region? So here I've focused it in on Sydney, and with a few hundred kilometres north and south and east and west of Sydney. And here's the information you get from these models now. So you see from the low-resolution model, there's basically not a lot of information there. It's just everything's the same as far as it's concerned. And as you move to the higher-resolution models, you start to see some differences. It's not clear what relationship this has with the coastline or anything like that. If you look at precipitation, there's possibly even less information from these models. And then we can look at the change. And this is the kind of information we have from the GCMs. Okay, so when you want to deal with these sort of scales, we really do need to get higher spatial information. And we do that by downscaling the global models, and there's essentially two ways to downscale, statistical and dynamical. Okay. Statistical downscaling is essentially you look at the observed record and you form some statistical relationship between the observation that you're interested in, precipitation, say, and some other climate field, so say the mean sea level pressure. And you assume that that empirical relationship will remain true into the future, and then you just apply that to the mean sea level pressure field you get from the GCM, and that gives you your downscaled estimate at the station location that you want your precipitation from, for instance. And there's many, many different ways to do this, okay, in statistical downscaling. The other way is dynamical downscaling. In dynamical downscaling, you start by saying, okay, we actually know how the atmosphere works, the dynamics of the atmosphere, we know the laws of physics, we can actually model the movement of the atmosphere in a very similar way to that they do in numerical weather prediction, and we produce weather day to day, and we can run this for a very long time to produce climate. Okay? So dynamical is based on our sort of knowledge of the physical system, whereas statistical is based on an empirical relationship between the data, two data sets. Okay. So I'll just give a quick example of the difference that this can make by talking about a regional climate model. This is when you do dynamical downscaling, you use tools like regional climate models. And this particular one is based on the weather research and forecasting model, and was run at 10 kilometre resolution over southeast Australia. And what I'm showing here is the highest resolution GCM that I've been showing and the regional model next to it, okay? So you see, just looking at the mean annual temperature field, now with the regional model, we can clearly see sort of the cool region, which is showing us the highest ranges in the snowy mountains. This is the alpine snow region in Australia. Just near that, you can clearly see the close coastal plain between the mountains and the coast in Victoria and New South Wales down there. You actually see the mountains in northern New South Wales, and you can see strong sort of coastal effects along the northern New South Wales coast there, and none of which is present in the GCM. If we zoom into the same Sydney region that I was showing before, now all of a sudden in the regional model you can see a strong coastal effect all the way along there. You can see this urban heat island of the city itself here, and you can see this blue mountains to the west of the city, strong cooling as you move up into the mountains there. And similarly, we can look at the precipitation, and now all of a sudden at this scale we see the strong coastal maxima precipitation and the secondary maxima out here on the slopes of the blue mountains, none of which is present at all in the GCMs. So it's this sort of difference in information that you have at these scales that provides, at least to some extent, more confidence in the changes that they're predicting when you use these different scales to look at the future. All right. So what downscale projections are around right now that you can get in touch with people and get some data that you might actually be able to use in adaptation research? So the first one I'll talk about was produced by the Bureau of Meteorology. They used what's called an analog statistically downscaled projection. Now, keep in mind that all of these downscaling techniques have pros and cons, okay? So I'm not trying to place a judgment here on any of these techniques. Of course, I have my favourite one that I use all the time, which is clearly the best, but that's not what I'm trying to say. So I've got here a reference for one of the publications based on this technique, so you can get a good description of exactly how this technique works. Essentially, they've downscaled daily precipitation, minimum and maximum temperature. Okay, and they've done this both for a set of station locations around Australia, but they've also produced it on a grid over Australia at 0.05 degrees, so about a 5 kilometre grid over Australia. And if you're interested in finding out more about this data set, getting hold of some of the data from this data set, then please email Bertrand Timball at the Bureau. Bertrand and his group really developed this technique and are continuing to develop and use this technique for a number of different things. So a very, very broad brush description of how this technique works. Basically what they do is that they find a historical analogue based on a small set of predictors, okay? And these predictors can include things like mean sea level pressure, temperature at 850 hectopascals in the atmosphere, wind speed at that level in the atmosphere. Okay, so they basically took at historical data, they do a regression against these predictors, like mean sea level pressure, and then they look at the future, they look at the predictors, and then they find a time that happened in the past that, according to the predictors, was the same. Okay. So if they look at, if they're using these three predictors here, they find a time in the past that had very similar mean sea level pressure, very similar temperature, very similar wind speed, and they say, what's this future day looks exactly like that past day. And they just plonk that day in. Okay. So a clear limitation of this is that it cannot predict an event that hasn't occurred in the historical record. Okay. It's basically, the assumption is, by changing the sort of frequency that these historical days occur, you are going to reproduce the future, actual future climate. Okay. Now, when they do this, they can put in a lot of sort of regional detail. Okay, there's a, by doing this, they're sort of maintaining various aspects like physical consistency and so on, the effects of the mountains and that kind of stuff. It's sort of already in that historical record. So they, by, you know, they're keeping that in that by doing this. And here's the sort of results that you get. Okay, so on the top, there's sort of the mean of the change predicted by 4 GCMs for rainfall in winter and summer. And on the bottom, when they use those 4 GCMs and downscale it with this analog technique, what they end up getting. Okay, so in winter, the GCMs basically saying sort of southern Australian coast from the southwest to the east, drying. When they do their downscaling, you clearly see basically the same story, but that the intensity of that drying has got a lot more regional detail in there now and stuff. Okay, now it's not always true that this technique just directly downscales what's happening in the GCMs. If you look at Tasmania, you'll see that actually the GCMs are suggesting that the eastern part of Tasmania gets wetter, and in their downscaling, they're actually suggesting the eastern part of Tasmania gets drier. So they've kind of flipped that prediction completely with this technique. So you can get some interesting things that come out that I'm not exactly sure why that happened. In summer, the GCMs are predicting this sort of widespread moistening of the north and northeast, and when you do the downscaling, you get a similar result. Although now you see on the New South Wales east coast, you see much stronger, they predict a much stronger wetting along that coastal region with this downscale technique than you get directly from the GCMs. So, the next one I'll talk about is another statistically downscaled approach. This was produced by the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries. And they use what's called a stochastic weather generator approach. Okay. Now, this is work led by Dr. D. Lee Lui in the Department of Primary Industries. He's a senior research scientist there. And he's also downscaled daily precipitation, minimum and maximum temperature. And you'll notice for a lot of the statistically downscaled data sets, these three variables come up all the time, because the statistically downscaling relies on there being a long historical record in order to create these empirical relationships. And the only climate variables that we have sort of high confidence long historical records for are essentially these three variables. And that's, if you're interested in this data set and would like to get hold of some of the data or find out more about it, then please email DLee at that email address there. So to describe this a little bit, in many ways, it's a bit more of a complicated method. First, he estimates the statistical distributions of the precipitation minimum maximum temperatures from the historical daily record. Okay, so this is relatively easy for temperature. You can produce a distribution of temperatures. They tend to look fairly reasonably Gaussian, so they're kind of nice distributions. It's much harder for precipitation because you sort of have to estimate two things. One is the probability of it raining on any particular day, and then if it does rain, you have to have a distribution that tells you how much it might rain that day as well. So it's more of a complex interaction between these things. He then estimates changes to these distribution bases based on the GCM monthly projections of the future. Okay. So Most of the GCM simulations that were performed in the CMIT-3 experiment did not save daily outputs for the whole century, but they did save monthly outputs. And he utilises the fact that he has monthly outputs that span the whole century in order to try and change these distributions. Once you have these distributions, how they change into the future, you then use a stochastic weather generator to generate synthetic daily time series from these distributions. So it's, you can use this to generate present day climate, but it won't match the observations that we had today. But statistically, they'll be the same as the actual observations. So it won't be the same sequence of wet and dry days, but the sequence of wet and dry days statistically will be the same as what was in the historical record. And when you look into the future, that relationship has statistically changed based on the statistics coming out of the GCM projection. Okay. So there's a bunch of questions that are left when you use this technique. One is, how well do the GCMs reproduce the historical record statistics? Okay, because if those statistical distributions from the GCMs don't look like the historical record, then why would you trust the changes in them that the GCMs produce? And also there's a scale issue here. So you have changes in monthly statistics and you're using that to change daily statistics. So there's many different ways. A month might get wetter, but it might get wetter because you have more rain days that month, or it might get wetter because you have the same number of rain days that just rain more each day. Right? So there's not a one-to-one transition there, so you have to make some choices in exactly how you make those changes. Nevertheless, DLE has done this for over 1,000 stations across New South Wales. Okay, so this is a lot of work was done here. It's a big data set that's available from DLE to look at this. Fortunately, I don't have any nice pictures to show that. So I'll move straight on to now talking about a dynamical downscaling approach. And this is data that's not available right now, but a project that's underway shortly and will be probably the most comprehensive downscaled data set available once it's done. It's a collaboration between the Climate Change Research Centre at UNSW and the Office of Environment and Heritage, as it's currently called today. Yeah, and it should be completed in 3 years. Now, with this approach, we can cover a lot more variables than the standard daily precip max and min temperature. There's more than 100 climate and related variables that will be the model looks at, and we'll produce outputs at least every 3 hours, but also you'll have daily and monthly outputs for all these variables as well. And for ones like precipitation, we'll even have hourly precipitation estimates as well. And this will be produced at a 10-kilometre grid over southeast Australia. If you want to find out more about the project, Graham Turner at OEH is the man to get in touch with. And if you're interested in sort of the more research side of things, you can contact myself at the CCRC. So basically for this, the methodology is that we create lateral boundary conditions and the sea surface temperatures from the GCMs. And we use that to drive these regional climate models. Okay, so basically, the GCM tells the regional climate model what's happening around the boundary of the area of interest, and the regional climate model models the motion of the atmosphere within that domain, models the weather day-to-day, basically. Okay. And we do that for present day, and we do that for future times. So the major limitation with this technique is that it requires large amounts of computer time and data storage. Okay. So like this is the other techniques, discrete techniques on a modern day desktop machine, you can actually run those techniques, no problem. But these techniques, you can't do that at all. These require supercomputers to run on. This project's looking at using about 6 million CPU hours on the National Supercomputer Facility and producing towards a petabyte of output data. Okay, so they're sort of that's the limiting thing for these kind of techniques. Fortunately, we have the computing power and storage capability these days, so this would be sort of worldwide one of the most detailed
attempt to use dynamical downscaling to produce this kind of future projection. And so this is the Narclim domain. So there's quite a big region that we first look at around 50 kilometer resolution, and then we zoom in to the red box area that you can see there at about 10 kilometer resolution. So it's deliberately sort of centered around the coastal regions and the mountains where we see these strong regional effects. It also means for the east coast, which is strongly impacted by east coast low storms, which are often off the coast, we can capture the entire storms inside the domain and hopefully do a much better job of their movement and intensification as they move down the coast. So, quick summary. The currently available climate projections for New South Wales include a couple of direct GCM-based projections, and these are available from CSIRO, and also the set that was done by UNSW for DEQA at the time. And there's a couple of currently available downscale climate projections that you can use as well. One produced by the Bureau of Meteorology, this analog technique by Bertrand Timball and his group, and another produced by the New South Wales DPI. And this was by Dr. D. Lee Liu and his team. And in the future, there will be this Narclim dynamically downscaled projections, but that won't be for a little while. So I'll end there.